Today on the podcast, we're talking about an unconventional way that you can edit your photos in Lightroom. You know, if you struggle to dial in your edits the way you like them, it's definitely worth checking out this unconventional way that David Kingham is going to share with us in today's episode. What is going on, everybody? It's your host, Austin James Jackson. We're back with another episode of the Learn Landscape Photography Podcast. If you guys are new here, welcome. If you're not new here, welcome as well. Super excited to have you here. And in today's episode, we're talking about some unconventional or outside of the box editing strategies or editing workflows, I guess, in Lightroom. In this episode, I talk with professional photographer David Kingham. I messaged David about doing this episode, and he had mentioned to me via Instagram message that he had an unconventional way of editing photos. So, of course, I was really intrigued by that. And of course, that was something that he taught to his workshop clients and in tutorial videos and everything like that. So, of course, I was intrigued because I wanted to know exactly how he edited his photos. So we're talking about a lot of that in today's episode. He also talks about how he doesn't really use Photoshop. So for those of you guys out there that hate using Photoshop, this might really work for you. It might help to free you of being in Photoshop and give you a little bit better way to edit your photos. So I think overall, it's going to be really helpful. I don't want to spoil any of the advice or tips given in the episode, but we are going to jump right into it. So here is my conversation with David Kingham. Alrighty, today on the podcast, I'm excited to welcome David Kingham. Welcome, David, to the podcast. On this, will you just start off by telling us a little about yourself for some of our listeners that may not be familiar with you or your work?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Austin. I am a professional nature photographer. I've been doing this for, 15 years or so. And I lead photography workshops all over the Western U.S. and travel full-time in an RV, and I've been doing that for like 10 years. I run the Nature Photographers Network, which is a, discussion forum for getting image critiques, stuff like that. And I'm also the publisher of Nature Vision magazine, which we launched about a year ago. And that's like enough about me.
Nice. Yeah, that's perfect. A lot of good things going on, it sounds like. And I'm certainly going to link all that at the end. We'll talk a little bit more about all those things at the end for everyone listening. But in this episode, I am really looking forward to talking about kind of what you and I have been messaging back and forth about, which is some non-traditional editing methods, I guess is how I would describe it. Is that a good way to describe what we're after?
Yeah, definitely. Non-traditional in Lightroom for sure.
So you briefly explained kind of your method to me via direct message, but I'm confident that there's probably more to it than what you messaged me in a short paragraph. And I'm really, really curious about how it works. I just want to kind of jump straight into the meat of it. And will you explain to us how you edit your images that, at least from what I'm understanding, is quite different from everybody else or a lot of other people?
Yeah. So I came up with this method because I was really frustrated with the way traditional methods were used in Lightroom. Because everyone taught the same thing about, how to set your black and white points using the black and white slider. And I was just never happy with the way my images turned out. I mean, it was occasionally, but I just always had this lingering thing in the back of my head, like, this doesn't look the way that I want it to. And, I was teaching this to people in workshops and stuff, and I noticed other people really struggling with it too. So eventually I just got tired of it and decided that I was going to learn everything possible about Lightroom. And so I just went in there and started playing with every slider and seeing how they interacted together and trying to figure out some sort of secret sauce that no one else had discovered yet. So I started getting really good at finding those things. And then I kind of had some epiphanies. I think one was my friend David Thompson was talking about, you know, how it's all about the midtones, the midtone contrast. And that kind of got me really thinking, because I didn't see a way to do that in Lightroom, because everything seems to be kind of concentrated towards, you know, the basic panel and creating contrast there, which creates really harsh contrast. So I just started digging around and realized that the tone curve was the answer to that. Because the tone curve works primarily in the midtones, especially if you work with the just a normal tone curve that has the sliders on it, not the point curve. But I was still having struggles with creating too much contrast that way. So I kind of had another epiphany when I heard this interview with, I think it was like an Adobe engineer or something that helped develop Lightroom. And he was talking about how like the early stages of Lightroom, that like the black slider was like the starting point for it at zero was different than it is today, because the images were just coming out too flat for what they wanted for the general public. So that kind of got me thinking that, oh, I can go the opposite direction with the black slider. I don't have to go negative with it like everyone else does. So I started experimenting with bringing the black slider up, and I slowly worked farther and farther up because I was hesitant to push it too far because it's going against what everyone else teaches. And I kept pushing it further and further until eventually I just kind of realized that plus 100 is where I want to be. So I pretty much set every image to plus 100 to start with these days, which creates kind of a really a flat image to start with. So I take away all of that really harsh contrast. And then I kind of rework that contrast in through the tone curve. And because the tone curve works in the midtones and not so much on the, you know, the extreme ends of it, that I was able to actually create that midtone contrast that I wanted in the tone curve. But the key was getting that black slider up to kind of kill the contrast to start with. So that was my really big epiphany there. And it's really helped people to kind of have an easier way to create the results that they want. Every time I teach this in my workshops or in videos and stuff, you know, people tell me that it's completely changed the way they process their photos. And they're so thankful because it's so much easier. So it's been a really... really cool finding on my part.
So I'm interested, will you just explain, I know what it is, but I think for a lot of people that are listening, like as photographers, we throw out the word midtone contrast all the time. And like, I think a lot of people can think like, okay, it's contrast to the midtones, but like, will you really explain exactly what that means when you're like trying to target midtone contrast?
Yeah, it's a really hard thing to explain, and I haven't come up with a good way to describe it. It's something that I feel like has to be demonstrated, because when you see the difference between, you know, creating regular contrast where your shadows get really blocked up and they look kind of muddy, and your highlights get like, you're not blown out, but they're like super bright and just lose the detail to them. You know, that's when you're creating that just a regular contrast. So creating midtone contrast like draws out those tones without blocking up the shadows and without making the highlights super bright. And it is really something you just have to see. And if you just start playing around in the tone curve, you'll kind of see how that works. So hopefully that kind of makes sense, and there's not a great explanation for it that I found.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I am also curious. The other question I jotted down while you were speaking is, you bring the blacks up to 100. I understand that. Do you bring them back down after you start processing, or do you usually leave them all the way up and then you reintroduce the darks and the blacks via that tone curve and always leave it at plus 100? Yeah. The final edit, if that makes sense.
most of the time I leave it at plus 100 and that's the final result.
Okay.
Occasionally I'll pull it back down just a little bit if I can't quite get as much contrast as I need out of the tone curve, but that's getting to be pretty rare these days.
And are you additionally with just the basic sliders, when you do that plus 100s on the blacks, are you still doing what most people do, you know, bring highlights down, shadows up, or are you maybe bringing the shadows down to compensate for those blacks at all?
Yeah. And I forgot to mention the other thing that I do on pretty much every photo is I bring the exposure down as well. So what that does is it kind of creates space on the histogram on the right side to be able to pull my highlights into. Because if it's exposed properly in the field, then there's not enough room to pull those highlights into. And the highlights are what brings your image to life. So if you can't pull those out enough, that's when you get really dull images. So yeah, I do pull my highlights up. Like in the tone curve, I pull up my lights and my highlights, and I usually bring the darks down, and the shadows might go up a little bit. But I play with those two sliders a lot and try to experiment and see what works the best. Because sometimes I'll bring the darks up if I don't want it to be so like dark and moody. If I want something that's a little more light, then I'll bring the darks up and I'll bring the shadows down to just add a little bit of contrast.
I want to take a break from today's episode and talk about a really cool opportunity if you are a beginner or intermediate photographer that is really serious about taking better photos and getting better at photography. Now, usually about 4 to 6 times a year, I teach in-person workshops around the Western United States centered around helping you become a better photographer. Now, my workshops are kept to just 5 people, which means that you will get plenty of one-on-one attention. So regardless of your skill level, whether you just picked up your first camera or whether you've been shooting for 15 years, I promise you, you're going to get so much out of it. I'm going to cater the class directly to you. Best of all, after the workshop, I'm going to add you to my alumni group on Facebook where you can get literally weekly image feedback. We can connect at all times. When the workshop is over, it's not done. I'm still going to be your mentor. I'm going to be there to help you and become better at photography. Now, like I said, if you're serious about becoming better at photography, don't wait any longer. Register for one of my workshops this year. You can visit austinjamesjackson.com/workshops. That link will be down below in the podcast description that you can click on as well. I really can't wait to see you guys out there. So another thing that you had mentioned in our brief messages back and forth was talking about the white balance and how you balance the whites, I guess, in the frame. And that is something that I talk a lot about. People on the podcast here are probably sick of hearing me talk about how important white balance is, but I love hearing it from somebody else. Can you talk about the importance of the white balance in addition to how you do it that might be different than somebody else?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, in my workshops, I was finding that almost all the students were really having trouble setting their white balance. And I found that oftentimes people didn't even set their white balance. They just left it to whatever the camera picked. And I think people just didn't understand where to put it. So, and the other thing was that, you know, most people will say that, well, what, there's no correct white balance, that white balance is a creative choice. And while that's true to some degree, I really think that there is a correct white balance, especially just to get as a starting point. I find that most people tend to go warm with their white balance as a starting point, and because it kind of draws out colors in a way.
Especially those sunset and sunrise images.
So going warmer to start with feels good to start, but it's not correct. And one thing I teach my people is that, when you're setting the white balance, the thing to look for is that there should be warmth in the highlights and coolness in the shadows. And that can be really hard to see until you get really experienced with it. So I developed another method of just cranking the saturation up to 100 temporarily. And that really helps to visualize the colors. So it makes it really obvious when you can see blues in your shadows and, you know, oranges and reds in your highlights. So that there's really been a game changer for people to kind of understand that, because it does take a lot of time to develop your eye to understand what those colors should look like. So just setting that white balance so that, you know, with the temperature, it's not too cool or too warm. You see that, you know, warmth versus coolness, and the temperature is just going to be a balance between the green and magenta. And then if you, you know, want to tweak it beyond that, that's where you have a little bit of creative freedom. But in general, you know, I try to keep things pretty realistic, and finding that point where your shadows are cool and your highlights are warm is what it actually looks like in reality.
Yeah. And I was just about to say that like, yes, the white balance is a creative choice, but if you care about having realistic looking images, which like not everyone does, I totally understand. Sure. Some people have like a tone to their images where they're all really cool or whatever. That's fine. But if you are a landscape photographer that wants to create realistic images, you are totally correct that you have a little bit of play with the white balance, but not a lot. There's like a very narrow range that you need to be in for your image to look realistic. And I find personally that like, it's white balance, and you can tell me if you agree or not, but the white balance is almost like the foundation of the photo. If the white balance is off, there's nothing that you can do to fix the photo down the road. Like, you're just never going to create an impactful, realistic looking image if the white balance is off at the start.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I really drill that into people's minds that that's like one of the first things they should do. Usually have them create kind of the correct contrast first, and then set the white balance, and they kind of have to go hand in hand with each other. Sometimes you can set one or the other first, but because if it's really low contrast and you try to crank up the saturation, there might not be enough contrast to really see the colors. So sometimes you have to pull that contrast out first. So it's definitely a balancing act.
So I'm also interested, you had via message, you had told me that you don't really use Photoshop for much anymore, and you just try and get as much done as possible in Lightroom. There's multiple questions that arise from this, but will you just elaborate on that point?
Yeah. And again, it goes back to, you know, I wanted to find a really simple method for the people that I'm teaching, because, you know, I used to teach Photoshop, and, you know, you'd spend hours trying to cover concepts that, you know, people would walk away, and, you know, why they might have taken away a few things. It was just so complicated that it takes them years and years and years to learn. And I wanted to find something that was really simple that not only they could use, but I could use myself. So I've been much, much happier since I've started using this method, because I didn't like spending an hour on an image. It's just, that wasn't fun to me. I would rather get through more images in that time. So, and it's just not as complicated technically anymore. So I do a lot of masking in Lightroom, and I found I can, especially with the newer cameras, I shoot with the R5 currently, the Canon, and the newer files have so much dynamic range that even a fairly, you know, high dynamic range scene, like a sunset or something, I can usually pull that out of one photo. And so I can mask almost anything in Lightroom these days, except for like super complicated stuff with, you know, tree branches or something. But it does a really great job now. And I find that I can do 90, 95% of my work in Lightroom. And then I just go into Photoshop to do some really basic things, to like cloning stuff out and maybe adding some like Orton effect or something. But yeah, I, I do almost everything in Lightroom now, and I'm so much happier with my processing. It's just more fun these days.
Yeah. And to your point about being able to capture it all in one shot in terms of the dynamic range, I tell people all the time, I mean, if you're shooting a top of the line Sony or Nikon or Canon, you probably have enough dynamic range to capture almost any scene. And if you needed to bracket it, your bracket is going to look unrealistic because the dynamic range is so large. Yeah. And so I think a lot of people, and also I do, every time I say that, I always get somebody commenting like, well, you get better colors if you properly expose each aspect. And I just always say that you don't absolutely have to bracket it, don't do it, because the more steps you add to your editing process is the more potential places you can mess up and have ghosting or have unrealistic looking edit or whatever. So the simpler you can make it, and that totally aligns with your whole editing process of like, I want to make things as simple as I can. I want it to be simple and effective. And so I think that is really powerful. And it almost seems like maybe it might just be me that feels this way, but I feel like 5 years ago, the like landscape photography thing, it was really popular to like apply all these crazy edits and spend so much time editing. And I feel like we're like slowly moving into the like lightly edited image phase. I don't know if is that just me or I don't know.
Yeah, you do see a lot more delicately edited. I think it's a lot more refined would be a better word for
it. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's just weird. I don't know what changed, I guess, but anyways, one other thing that I wrote down here, when I look at your portfolio, I would definitely say that your images, they pack a punch, and like you say, they're delicately edited. They're not super heavily processed, but each image, one thing I really enjoy is that each image like stands on its own. There's not like any two images that have to go together. They're not like toned a certain way. And so they're really impactful that way. I'm curious, how much of that would you attribute to being able to find really great compositions versus you being able to apply certain editing techniques to create more impact in the image? So it's kind of a loaded question. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's both aspects are really important. Like if you don't create something good in the field, then you're not going to, you know, be able to polish that in Lightroom. But you know, even if you take something great in the field, if you don't know how to process it properly, you could really mess it up and it's going to look terrible as well. So I really think it's almost half and half, or at least it can be in the beginning. You know, once you get your editing methods down, then it's not such a big deal. It becomes kind of second nature. And then it becomes more important what you do in the field. But when you're starting out, processing is just a huge, huge part of it. And if you don't get really good at that, then you're never going to see the full potential of your images.
Yeah. I'm also curious with your, I guess, really simplified workflow, is there any plugins that you use for Lightroom that create, you know, effects or just anything like that? There's obviously tons of options out there.
Yeah, no, in Lightroom, I don't use anything. I use Helicon Focus for focus stacking, and that's really it.
And that keeps you so that you can just load your focus stack from Lightroom and not have to go into Photoshop, right?
Right. And it even, if you do it right, it returns a DNG, so you're still working with a RAW file. So it's just a brilliant process.
And does it work pretty well? Cause I feel like I tried it like 6 or 7 years ago and I was not super impressed with those like complicated, images, you know, where there's like flowers and something behind it, but does it work better now or does it work pretty well?
I would say it works incredibly well, but if you have like wildflowers that are moving in the scene, anything is going to struggle with that.
Yeah.
That's just a super hard thing to do. And you have to end up painting in those areas, which it has really good tools to, you know, actually mask in the areas you want. But yeah, those situations are just really challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So the last question that I usually always try and ask here on the podcast is, if you had one piece of advice for a photographer that's trying to take better photos, what would that piece of advice be? It can be something totally different than what we talked about today, or it can be something we talked about, but just a piece of advice, because there is a lot of people listening to the podcast that want to improve their photography.
Yeah. I'll keep it in line with what we're talking about. I always tell people to go into Lightroom and mess around with every single slider and see what they do, and do that on a variety of images and see how they interact with other sliders. Like a big one is playing with the exposure slider and then experimenting combined with the tone curve or the black and white sliders. Cause you can create totally different effects by, you know, darkening the image quite a bit and then really drying out the lights. Or if you want to go more high-key, pulling the exposure up, and just experiment as much as you can, because you're not going to screw up the raw file. You can always just reset it. So that's the biggest thing I can tell people, is just play until you can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, that's great advice. And finally, just wrap us up. Tell us, where can we find more of your work, buy from you, learn from you? I know you listed off a few things that you've got going at the beginning of the episode. Give us kind of a more detailed, you know, this is where you can find this and this is where you can find that. And I'll make sure to include all the links.
Okay. Yeah. My like portfolio website is David Kingham. It's KINGHAM.com. And my, where you can find our workshops and all the, you know, tutorials and all that fun stuff is exploringexposure.com. And what I had mentioned earlier, Nature Photographers Network, that's naturephotographers.network. And you can find Nature Vision Magazine on there as well.
Okay.
And I'm on Instagram as at David Kingham.
Perfect. I'll throw all those links on there. Thank you so much for being here today. This is going to be so helpful, and I'm excited to try out. I've tried the saturation trick before, but I'm going to try out the blacks trick and see how it works for me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Let me know how it goes for you.
Alrighty, well, hopefully that was helpful for you guys. I think that that is a really interesting way to edit your images, and I am certainly going to give it a try as soon as I get this podcast published. So hopefully you guys will give it a try as well. I think it's well worth the listen to. If you're listening to this while you're in the car or on a commute or whatever, listen to it again when you get home, when you're in front of the computer editing your images. Follow the things that David says. Give it a try. See if it works for you, because I think that it will. I think that it is really going to be helpful, and it's always nice to know how to do things a little bit different way than usual. So again, thank you guys so much for listening and downloading this episode. Also, I do really appreciate if you guys leave a review. I notice I've just got a couple of reviews on the podcast. I think there's like two reviews on Apple Podcasts, the app, which is kind of sad, because we have like 22,000 downloads of the podcast. Guys, help me out. Review the podcast. Let me know how you like it. Helps me to continue to grow my podcast, continue to get high quality guests on here. And ultimately, it helps me to fund the podcast so I can keep doing it. So if you are liking the podcast, make sure to let me know via review. But otherwise, thank you guys so much for checking out this week's podcast. And we'll see you guys next time. This is Austin James Jackson. See ya.